maybe they lose. But then they survive. You know, you can survive while being a loser. I tried it. There is all values that natural selection and the market are in charge of. Rest, on the other hand, are inefficient, exaggerated, wasteful. They are not maximized. They are not optimized. They are not competitive. Biologists do everything they can, and they can a lot, to sweep inefficiency, which means mediocrity, and waste under the rug, because they insult nature. No cell is perfect. No virus is perfect. It doesn't exist. I should maybe have titled my talk something around how many spermatozoids do you need to have in order to... I'll be in the große Halle. You'll see.
Alle reden immer von den Besten, den Klügsten, den Schnellsten. Aber was, wenn genau das Mittelmaß die eigentliche Superkraft ist? Der Philosoph Daniel Milo sagt, Evolution lebt nicht von Perfektion, sondern vom Gut genug. Daniel Milo ist Philosoph und Autor des 2019 erschienenen Buchs Good Enough – The Tolerance for Mediocrity in Nature and Society. Sein Vortrag über die Kraft des Mittelmaßes hielt er im Januar 2025 im Südpol in Luzern. Viel Spaß mit der Audioversion dieser Lecture.
Thank you for coming. I bet on 20. So how come? You know, it's mediocrity. It's not sexy. You have here pop and AI and integration and immigration and what? Mediocrity. Well, surprised me. But thank you for coming. What can we learn from mediocrity? In one word, nothing. There is nothing to be learned from a concept, be it goodness, joy, justice, or the color green. We need concreteness in order to philosophize. I'm a philosopher. In order to do so, we must ask, whose mediocrity? What kind of mediocrity? Where is it? Luckily, the organizers left it open. I think that the German tradition has really a weakness for abstract concept. I don't. I really need concrete. And the concrete here is mediocrity in nature. What will interest us is the mediocrities in plural, in cypress, in cactus, in giraffe, etc. There's a lot of mediocrity in these animals and organisms and microbes and amoeba. The term mediocrity in nature is provocative, of course, because mediocrity in nature is an oxymoron, as the lady said. A contradiction in terms. If not perfect, perfection is the monopoly of God, nature is universally conceived as excellent, an understatement. The dogma of Mother Nature wisdom is universal and intemporal. It is present in almost all civilizations, whether ancient or new, Western, Eastern, Amazonian, or Bantu. They all chant in chorus. Nature knows what she's doing. She's always right. Imitating nature is imitating our true self. No compliment is higher than being natural. It follows that nature and mediocrity are consensual antonyms. The vox populi, and when I say vox populi, it's not them, it's us. We really believe it. I do. I did. In fact, I did. For me, it went without saying. It was self-evident. Nature is the authority. And we'll see why. There is a reason, a scientific reason, why this is the authority of, as we say, efficiency, etc. There is a reason. But then I dove into animals and plants and microbes, and no, it's not true. Mediocrity is widespread in nature at all levels of life, from molecules to behavior, through cells, organs, and whole individuals. This is what we are going to see. There is none except. No cell is perfect. No virus is perfect. It doesn't exist. And not even, let's say, 9 out of 10. No. Everything in nature suffers from many problems or bugs. Many, many bugs. I show this in the two versions that were quoted. One was quoted of my research. The first was published by Harvard. I say, you know, Harvard. It means that these iconoclast ideas were accepted by biologists. It took them time, because when I presented this first in front of biologists, they said, no. Out of the question. No. And by the end of this journey, they said, I don't know, you know maybe French literature a bit, when André Gide was asked, who is the greatest poet, French poet? He answered, Victor Hugo, hélas. You know, hélas, unfortunately. And the same biologist said, Milo is right, hélas. Seriously, and I joined them. I liked better nature in its semi-closed perfection. It's beautiful. I learned to love nature otherwise, but maybe I'll convince you. If not, you know. So the first one, there are two versions of the same research. The first in English, Good Enough Deterrence for Mediocrity in Nature and Society at Harvard. And 5 years later, La Survie des Médiocres, Critique du Darwinisme et du Capitalisme chez Gallimard. So there is a cachet, a stamp. This is serious. You know, it can be funny, but it is serious. Science, it is serious science and philosophy. Yes, this mediocrity in nature exists, and it is prevalent all over the place. My argument here, and in general, is an a fortiori one. You know, a fortiori, all the more so. If the chances of a natural mediocre to survive and reproduce in the wild, where it is wild, are good, and we'll see, they are good. You stand excellent chances to survive, albeit your bugs. No problem. You don't have to be est. You know, est like strongest, prettiest, highest, fittest. I called it the estomania, the human estomania. We are all estomaniac, and you know it. The 10 greatest albums and the 3 best Iranian restaurants in Lucerne, etc., etc., etc. We are estomaniacs. And what I understood, that biology, through the fittest, partook in this, I thought, not hysteria, but almost this need that we have to grade, and to say this is the best, second best, third best, etc. And the idea that only these will survive. In my PhD, I did the same thing in culture, but we won't get into it. But the idea that only the best survive in posterity, the best writer, etc. There is no need to be est in order to prosper in society. You understand the idea? If it is, and I'm serious, it is easy to survive and reproduce in nature, in the wild, while being mediocre, and they are, you know, animals and microbes, they don't have social security, they don't find water, house, they have to look for all their needs. Life for us, excellent or mediocre for humans, is a picnic. Excuse me, I'm sorry. This is mediocre. This is really mediocre. Okay, this was the introduction. The World Health Organization, the WHO, publishes every decade the number of spermatozoids per ejaculation needed for declaring a male fertile. All other things, such as sperm volume and motility, being equal. Infertility is defined as the inability to achieve spontaneous pregnancy within 1 year of regular unprotected sexual intercourse. Yes, you are in the right place. It's okay. But I give a fight to the competition, the talking to animals, etc. So I speak about sperm. I should maybe have titled my talk something around, yes? How many spermatozoids do you need to have in order to, I'll be in the große Halle. You'll see. The World Health Organization. Last reference values from 2021 was based on semen samples from over 4,500 men in 14 countries on 4 continents. Verdict. You males need 39 million spermatozoids per ejaculation to be declared fertile. 39 million. But I see both genders very worried. Where am I going to bring these 39 million? Hey, when I read it, I said, maybe my daughters are not mine. I cannot bring so many spermatozoids. Don't worry. Truth is that this is a minimum. This is a minimum. 50% of males have more than 200 million spermatozoids per ejaculation. You see? This is the 39. And this is the median. And there are males who have 1 million and 200 million spermatozoids per ejaculation. And we should not boast for our super potence. Chimpanzees, for example, their sperm concentration spans between 54 and 2,750,000,000. So, I guess you are wondering what's going on here. Because it's too cheap, It's really too cheap. A philosopher trying to be sexy and funny. Sexy, literally. These data, they launched my research. I was so shocked by this something, and we understand why it is so shocking and why it is the epitome of mediocrity in nature. Sounds really surprising, absurd. This is a wonderful case of mediocrity in nature. First, we have to neutralize the concept. Mediocre is on the scale that starts with best and ends at worst, and in the middle you have excellent, good, average, good enough, mediocre, bad. I propose a tentative definition. Mediocre is below average. Mediocrity suffers from two illnesses. It is normative and it is subjective. Mediocrity is pejorative. It's not a compliment. No. Mediocrity is in the eyes of the grader. It's subjective. We need descriptive and objective criteria for calling X mediocre without judging it. I wondered, as many do, you know, in such cases, I opened the dictionary and I wondered, what is the etymology of mediocre? What does this word, the term, come from? And it was a pleasant surprise. It comes from here. Ocris, this is Ocris. We agree, Gina. Mountain. This is Ocris. Mid. Halfway, mediocre, halfway up the mountain. A rugged, stony mountain. So the exercise I propose, I'm sorry, I'm not no painter. But try this and this effort. Whenever I say mediocre, just try to imagine this image. It's not pejorative. It's just a place in the topography. It's here. That's all. It's not bad, not good. It just is somewhere. This is the mediocre. Second mine, this was the first mine. It is pejorative. How to avoid the subjective sense of mediocrity? Ever since the Greeks and the Egyptians, knowledge has a weakness for numbers. I'll read quickly. No, I won't. But you know maybe that Galileo said that nature is written with the language of mathematics. And if some of you come from either humanities or natural sciences, but not physics, we have an inferiority complex when we talk to mathematics. When you have numbers, it has the flair of objectivity. It's serious, it's really serious. So I made the decision. It was my first major breakthrough. I'm interested only in quantitative mediocrity, not qualitatives. So I neutralize the subjective. I give an example which is stupid, but I cannot resist because I love it. It comes from the Guinness. You know it? Ah, I thought you know this. This is the Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest. Well, Joey Chestnut, the undisputed champion, 14 times. His world record, of course, is, I know I'm not supposed to ask questions, but I guess, how many hot dogs is Joey Chestnut eating in 10 minutes? He's allowed also to eat beans at the same time. But how many hot dogs in 10 minutes? How much? 200? 200? No, be serious. Be serious. 76. No. Hey, Mrs. Mickey Sudo, Another legend, 10 times world champion, her record is 51. Hot dogs in 10 minutes. And we stay in numbers. A recent study, a scientific one, even quoted by Science, you know, the journal, with plenty of algorithmic equations show that the human limit is 83. 83. A rate of consumption similar to that of a grizzly bear chewing down an animal flesh. And the article, the paper, just hear this title. Modeling the maximal active consumption rate and its plasticity in humans. Perspectives from hot dog eating competitions. Somebody maybe remembered Drowning by Numbers of Peter Greenaway. So I drowned by numbers. It was fun. It was fun, it was stimulating, and I learned. We didn't learn yet from mediocrity, but I understood how to study mediocrity through numbers. It's the key. Enter the two protagonists of Darwinism. You understood, you remember the title of the book? It's a critique of Darwinism and capitalism. Hence, also, when I say survive, la survie des médiocres, you cannot but hear survival of the fittest. Yes. La survie des médiocres. So enter these two major concepts, natural selection, survival of the fittest. You remember, because we know it, Mother Nature knows what she's doing. With Darwin and his discovery, with Wallace too, but his discovery of natural selection, the quasi-infallibility of nature got the highest seal of legitimacy. Now, this wisdom is scientific. Because there is natural selection. What does natural selection? Listen to the master who describes natural selection as an entrepreneur. The idea that capitalism and Darwinism go hand in hand is not mine. Really not mine. And whenever you criticize Darwinism, very, very close is the critique of capitalism and neoliberalism and neo-Darwinism. So it's, listen, Darwin speaking. Natural selection will preserve and thus separate all the superior individuals, allowing them freely to intercross, and will destroy all the inferior individuals. So who will survive? The best. And the rest will perish. Natural selection is daily and hourly. No. If any one species does not become modified and improved in a corresponding degree with its competitors, it will be exterminator. It's serious. Natural selection is daily and hourly scrutinizing throughout the world every variation, even the slightest, rejecting that which is bad, preserving and adding up all that is good. Natural selection is the gatekeeper. It guarantees that the product is, if not the best, if not perfect, is around perfection. This is the idea. That's why I say that biology entered in this estomania that is ours. This craziness to have the best all the time. And the idea that we'll understand is fake, is false, is calumny, that only these will survive. Because we'll see that the competitors survive too. No problem. They are not exterminated. Maybe they lose. But then they survive. You know, you can survive while being a loser. I tried it. And Richard Dawkins, the Pope of Darwinism for the last 20 years, I guess you know the name, is also the enemy of God. Maybe you read his books. His real enemy is into a crusade against God. His natural selection is a miserly, listen, like this economical capitalist connotations, is a miserly accounted, grudging the pennies, watching the clock, punishing the smallest waste. There is a family resemblance between Darwin's natural selection and Adam Smith's invisible hand. Thanks to these two forces, nature and the market enjoy a proverbial wisdom. Nature knows what she's doing. In the market, we trust. With natural selection comes the elected, the est, the fittest. By the way, I won't enter. It's interesting, but there was a time when Darwin accepted the idea of Alfred Wallace, Russell Wallace, to replace natural selection with survival of the fittest. But so they both are more or less synonyms. Natural selection, survival of the fittest. Nature, as we said, became a sport where the winner, it's like a reality show. Reality TV? You say reality TV? No? The winner takes all. And all the others go home with honors. This is the idea, the image we have of nature. The winner takes all. Although we know it's not true. We know it's not true. This discrepancy between what we learn about nature and what we see in nature is amazing. This, well, you know. Life in the wild, are we told, is dichotomic. On the one side is the best who survives. On the other side are the rest. They perish. Life in society too. What are the characteristics of a survivor in nature as in society and economy? It is efficient, economical, competitive, maximized, innovative, optimized, cost-effective, rational, I guess there are more. You recognize all these, I guess, no? The rest, all values that natural selection and the market are in charge of. Rest, on the other hand, are inefficient, exaggerated, wasteful. They are not maximized. They are not optimized. They are not competitive. Biologists do everything they can, and they can a lot, to sweep inefficiency, which means mediocrity, and waste under the rug. Because they insult nature. And I heard it when I gave talks, and I gave many, many talks to biologists. To speak about mediocrity is really to insult this the authority, to insult natural selection, to insult Darwin. They take it personally. So, wherever I went, after the talk, the PIs, you know, the bosses of their labs, they said, you know, in my drawers, you know, metaphorical drawers, I have hundreds and thousands of cases you're talking about, but we don't publish it. Of course, we see it all the time. These inefficiency, not optimized, wasteful, exaggerated, redundant. We see it all the time. But nobody wants to publish it. Why? Because it goes against the grain. And the grain is the neo-Darwinian paradigm. I do the opposite. I celebrate inefficiency and wastefulness. And you remember all the list. I like them. I really like. And more than like, I believe, maybe you remember Freud's dichotomy between the principle of reality and the principle of pleasure rings a bell. Principle of pleasure, it is very pleasurable to imagine, to believe that nature is perfect. Yes. Principle of reality, just look what you see. Go out to the mountains, to the look at trees, and you'll see it's not true. This is the principle of reality. And as a philosopher, was paid by the poor French taxpayers for so many years. At least, I was obliged to take seriously truth and reality, which I did. So I like it. I like truth. It sounds ridiculous. I love truth. I love truth. And I love reality. And fiction I love in novels. Yes, I love novels. And Hamlet, and Cromwell, and Simenon, and Dürrenmatt. Yes, I love it. But it's not science. They describe the making of perfection. And I dedicated my journey, and it's a journey, it's 20 years. It's been 20 years of journey into biology, to the prevalence of excess. What is excess? When you can do with less, a lot less, if you have good memory, it must remind you something. What? What? The spermatozoids. When you do the same job with too much. Too much. What a waste. What a waste. Nobody will convince me that natural selection was behind this range. Range, you remember? Range. Impossible. Impossible. It's not optimized, it's not maximized, it's not efficient, it's not rationalized. It's a waste of energy. Waste. You remember the first breakthrough, major one, when I decided that I'm interested exclusively in quantitative mediocrity. And then, thanks to this, I understood that the real key in my critique of Darwinism is ranges. Because here we see it's blatant, it's flagrant, the waste, the absurdity. And then I presented to biologists, they love it, it's sexy. But they say, how many? Oh, you know, what a waste. We see these wide, extremely wide ranges all over nature, everywhere. There is hardly a variant, and that, I was about to say suffers, no, that enjoys these wide, wide ranges. So look at nephrons, you know nephrons? The body, small bodies inside our kidneys. This is a range. This is what I found, Senegalese and African, but it's not. It's a typical range of nephrons. But here, nephrons are really not spermatozoid. This is spermatozoid, and this is a nephron. And in terms of size, it is 200 or 300 bigger. So it was proven that you need around 300,000 nephrons to have an excellent functioning kidney. Most have more than a million. And million, in excess of a million nephrons, this is not one schnitzel a year. It's much, much more. But even the nephrons is a joke. Look, These are the ranges of organs. Organs. The brain. Look, the brain. You see the brain? This is the brain. This one, this guy. You know, brain consumes 20% of our energy. 20% of our energy, and the best one, the best energy we have. Look, it goes from 1 kilo to 1,700. Look at the liver. You see the liver? You can live with 1 kilo. People have 2.5, etc., etc. So here, it's not in terms of schnitzels. It is in terms of cows. You have to eat many cows in order to finance this gaspillage. Gaspillage. You say? Gaspillage. And it continues. Here are the distributions. And you have it not only in humans, but in lizards, and you have it in birds, and you have it everywhere. Look now, this giant squid, the range of his mass, the length of the giant squid, there are 2 meters, and there are those 20 meters. 20 meters, and you'll see, there's a... I'm finished. After you see with her. Because you are missing the best. And you got only the rest. But we believe in the rest, no? We love the rest. Okay, so I stop in Medias, in the middle of the mountain. I'm climbing the mountain, the Rocky Mountain. And I stop. The Everest. Thank you very much.
Danke, dass du diese Podcast-Episode gehört hast. Ich hoffe, sie hat dir gefallen und du konntest etwas Neues erfahren und lernen. Und wenn du schon mal da bist, lass uns doch eine Bewertung oder ein paar Sternchen da. Das würde uns sehr helfen. Und wenn du mehr Vorträge vom AHA-Festival hören willst, abonniere diesen Podcast und folge uns auf Instagram. Auch über Feedback freuen wir uns sehr. Schreib uns eine Mail an am@aha-festival.ch. AHA, ein Podcast für Wissen, ist eine Zusammenarbeit von Christoph Fellmann und mir, Anna Matijasiewicz. Mitproduziert und komponiert hat Nikola Miloš Mišić.